Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12:42 p.m. That is Pacific Standard Time. Today is March 8th. Well, it was a reasonably positive day on stock markets today, where we saw Europe and Asia bouncing and a relative strength continuing in among a number of the commodity-related markets, not least in Brazil. But where I'm turning my attention to at the beginning of the broadcast is to look at Wall Street, because there are some clear divergences that are now becoming evident. If one were only to focus on the Dow Jones Industrial Average, following the extremity and speed of the decline that we saw in early February, one could easily conclude that we are in for ranging, and I continue to think that that is the most likely scenario for the Dow. But it isn't the only index, and there are some clear exceptions to that rule. And the primary exception is the NASDAQ 100. The NASDAQ 100 is one of the few indices that has not only pulled back, but also then subsequently recouped all of its decline in a very short period of time. It got all the way up to its peak at the end of February, so only 2 weeks after the big pullback, and then it pulled back, but now it's right back at the peak once more. And of course, it is being led higher by the likes of Amazon. And Amazon was in additional high territory in here today. It was helped, of course, by I think what could only be considered disappointing earnings by companies like Kroger. And of course, then you also had the M&A activity in Express Scripts, which is a testament to just how threatened the health insurance sector feels when they start buying pharmacy companies. And again, that is also part of the Amazon effect. But there is a broader point, and that is that Amazon is a subscription-based business. The vast majority of its sales come from the Prime membership, and it has 100 million people enrolled in that. Netflix is also a significant subscription-based business. And it is accelerating higher, and it has cleared the $300 level. It is really quite overextended, and it's a B-rated credit. It's not a company that is without risk, but it is certainly benefiting from the continued, appraisal of the subscription model. Autodesk yesterday had a very firm day on its earnings, which were entirely due to its subscription model. Activision Blizzard was among the better performers in here today. And again, that is also a subscription model. Now, of course, when we look at some of these companies, they're not wholly subscription models, but they have all adopted some form of subscription model in the last few years. Cisco, having spent the better part of 15 years doing nothing at all, has been breaking out over the course of the last year, and that is almost exclusively because of the adoption of its subscription model. Well, when we start to think about it in those terms, the technology sector is benefiting from adopting a new business model. They've historically been highly cyclical companies. That is no longer the case. They are no longer cyclical, because by adopting the subscription-based approach rather than the product-based approach and relying on new sales from each additional new product, what they are in fact doing is streamlining their cash flows. And what that contributes to is a predictability in their valuation, and that generally then converts into investors affording these types of companies a higher multiple, and that higher multiple is translating into a higher price. So that is part of the reason why the NASDAQ is breaking on the upside, or at least on the cusp potentially of breaking on the upside, while the wider market is simply going sideways. And as long as the NASDAQ 100, which has been the clear leader within the US markets over the course of this entire bull market, is continuing to exhibit relative strength, then we can conclude that what we are in at the present moment for the wider market is a consolidation within the context of a medium-term bull market, which is becoming progressively more mature. The valuations that we're starting to see, despite the fact that they've adopted these subscription models on some of these companies, are getting quite aggressive. And when, for example, we look at Cisco, then it has one of the lower ones, but it has had a policy of buying back shares for a significant amount of time. And its PE of 17 is certainly not the most demanding. Whereas when we look at something like Amazon, despite the fact that they are raising prices and they are continuing higher, it's still got an estimated PE of 188. So even if it goes up indefinitely, it'll still have a long way to go before it can justify that multiple. Well, when we take a look around the world, then let's take a quick look at the MSCI world, because it has a rather similar chart pattern to the Dow Jones, and we can see that it very quickly unwound its overbought condition relative to the trend mean and has subsequently bounced. And so far, as long as that 500-point level holds, I think that we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the consolidation theory. And but nonetheless, it's probably going to take some time to unwind this period of heightened volatility. When we look at the VIX index, it is continuing to bounce from 15, and 15 represents the upper side of that underlying trading range from last year. I think it is really quite unlikely that we're going to see the VIX index go back below 10 anytime soon, and that would suggest that we are in a more volatile environment. We can anticipate that there will be a larger peak-to-trough swings just by virtue of the fact that we are in a more volatile environment generally. Well, when we look at the Chinese market, then it is in positive territory again in here today. It continues to hold this 3,400-point level and is rebounding from the lows that we saw in February. But it really does need to sustain a move back above 3,500 to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment and that we are seeing anything more than a short covering rally. I do continue to believe that we are in a more risky environment with regard to China, that because we have deteriorating governance, that doesn't mean that we're on the point or on the cusp of an imminent crisis, but what it does suggest is that the market does deserve a higher risk premium. Then, when we look at the H-share index, it has bounced from the region of the trend mean, and around that 12,000 level, it's finding support, and it continues to hold the progression of higher reaction lows. So, this was a very swift pullback from the upper side of what is an evolving 8-year range. But as long as it is holding that 12,000 level, we can probably give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. The Indian market was also in mildly positive territory in here today, and the Australian market is bouncing from that 5,900-point level. And this is the second time in three sessions that it has done so, because that also coincides with the region of the trend mean. And that would suggest that this is continuing to be a consolidation for the Australian market. Well, when we look at the resources sector, obviously there's been a lot of news about tariffs, but this continues to look like a relatively orderly pullback and consolidation following what had been a really impressive move higher in the latter few weeks of last year. As long as it is holding the region of the trend mean, we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. It is a pretty similar story for the FTSE 350 Mining Index, which is now right back in the region of the trend mean, and this is a natural area where we might anticipate some support being found. Well, when we've looked at the medium-term bull market that began in the latter part of 2008 and early 2009, we've often described it as liquidity fueled. And obviously, what's going on with the ECB and the Eurozone is going to play into that. When we think about what the total assets of central banks are, then they're at approximately 20.6 trillion. And the most important point is that it continues to trend higher. And part of the reason it's trending higher is because the ECB is adding approximately 30 trillion euros every month, and they'll continue to do so until we get to September. The Japanese are also printing, but the Federal Reserve is reducing the size of its balance sheet, and China is at neutral. So, what that suggests is that the onus for continued provision of liquidity, which is both global and mobile, is falling on the ECB in Japan. And as of, well, from September, the onus will fall exclusively on Japan. Now, in here today, the euro was pulling back, and it was down about a cent against the dollar. Now, part of the reason for that is because markets were perhaps looking at the 125 area as an area of resistance, which has held for the last 6 weeks, but also because the ECB has really not said anything new. There was a lot of news headlines, but they have not really changed their stance, other than to say that they're removing a piece of language, but that they're more than willing to put it back in if things go pear-shaped. So that's not a change. And the market was perhaps anticipating that there would be some form of change. This looks like nothing more than a consolidation within an overall bullish environment, however, that the ECB is supporting the bond markets. It continues to buy, and most particularly it is supporting the peripheral bond markets. And as long as that remains the case, we're probably not going to have a lot of strife with regard to Europe. The bigger question is what happens subsequently. What happens when the ECB is no longer buying bonds, and then we have a disruptive election result? Because it is looking progressively more likely that either governments are going to have to come together and figure out how to solve the problems that are being posed to the Eurozone, or they are going to face the prospect of continued rises in populism or reactions against the status quo, and we see ample evidence of that in Italy. The euro continues to hold the 123 level, but as long as it doesn't sustain a move below 120, well, then this will continue to look like a medium-term uptrend. Then when we look at the pound, well, it got all the way back up to test the 140 area, and it is now back below it, and it's unwinding some of its overbought condition relative to the trend mean. Well, it's back in the region of the peaks that we saw back in October, and this is so far a reasonably similar-sized reaction to what we saw towards the end of last year. So it would really require either significant dollar strengthening or something untoward to happen with regard to the UK for a sustained move back below the trend mean. Of course, what I've talked about on a number of occasions has been that euro and pound cross rate is a barometer, not least because it has been going sideways for so long. But now, when we turn our attention to some of the commodity-related currencies, the Australian dollar is right in the region of the trend mean, and this is a natural area where, if it's going to find support, one might be thinking that this is around the area. Then, the Canadian dollar is, the US dollar is back up to test the 130 area. This is the upper side of its range, and it's a big round number, so we may get some pause and consolidation. Then when we look at some of the emerging market currencies, the Brazilian real has been reasonably steady, and that has contributed to people having faith in the stock market. If one were to simply take the labels off the chart, this looks like a base formation evolving around the 3 real level, and the dollar is firming within it. What would really be required to confirm that the real is going to strengthen through 3 would be for this incremental progression of higher reaction lows to be broken. So despite the fact that the dollar has been particularly weak, a lot of the strengthening that people were anticipating for the real has probably already happened. And when we look at the Brazilian market, it certainly has challenges, not least on the political front, but it also has done really rather well. It's a bit overbought relative to the trend mean. It has been liable to have reactions in the order of about 10,000 points. It But it did bounce back very emphatically from the move that we saw in February. But I think it is probably due some consolidation at these levels, and not least because we are seeing some pressure coming into the real and foreign investors, and we've seen ample evidence of that over the course of the last few years, tend to respond most favorably when they have the currency in their favor. And that hasn't been the case now in Brazil for a while. Then, when we look at the gold market, well, gold was in positive territory yesterday, and it pulled back a little bit in here today. But this continues to look like a consolidation in the upper side of an almost 5-year range. And provided it continues to hold the $1,300 area and the region of the trend mean, then I think that the benefit of the doubt can be given to continued potential for additional upside or an upward break. Then, when we look at the 10-year Treasury, well, the yield was a little bit softer in here today, but so far this has been a very, very orderly consolidation following a significant run-up that we had from the end of December through to January. I think it is worth considering that the vast majority of issuance is going to come in the lower maturities. So, when we look at the 5-year, we have evidence of a clear upward break, and there's plenty of additional new supply coming into the market. And of course, the 2-year has already had a big move. When we look at the 30-year, in other words, going out to the other side where there isn't a lot of new supply coming through, it's right in the region of the upper side of this 3-year range. And again, when we look at the yield curve, there's very tight spreads. We're only talking a few basis points between the 30 and the 10-year, despite the fact that there is a 20-year maturity difference. And that does give us an idea of just how tight the yield curve spread has become. It's right now at 60 basis points, and there's a clear downtrend. And eventually, we're going to see this trend reach zero. And then we'll have a very clear indication of when we're going to get the next recession. But of course, it's not the only thing that we look at, and yield curve spread is very reliable, but so are high yield spreads. And the high yield spread has been locked in this very tight range for more than a year already. So it's hardly a big prediction to conclude that when it eventually breaks out, something will have happened in the high yield markets. And the chances are that when it breaks out, it's going to break out on the upside. So until that in fact happens, then the chances are that there isn't going to be a great deal to worry about beyond the potential for additional ranging in stock markets. And we clearly have evidence of technology leading on the upside. So I think that that is certainly a bullish fact, that when you get a leading sector now pressuring its highs, if it in fact does manage to break out, then that will contribute, I think, to a bit more enthusiasm among investors, and then people will start looking for bargains, and the ranging environment that we have on stock markets will eventually be resolved on the upside. But it is those very big mega cap technology companies, particularly those that have adopted the subscription model, are the ones that we need to watch most closely for signs of inconsistency, because not only because they're so large and because they've adopted these attractive business models, but also because they represent such large weightings in those indices. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.